Hello and welcome to episode 179 of the Saints Score podcast, where we discuss everything going on at Southampton Football Club. Last week, hope somewhat returned after a 3-3 draw of Arsenal, but that has well and truly gone now. No points against either Bournemouth or Newcastle means that we are now 6 points away from safety with just 4 games left to play. To discuss it all, my name's Harry Tizard and I'm joined by Ollie Bost and Mikey Maidwood this week. Ollie, how are you doing?
Oh, very good, thanks. I've seen a lot more of you than usual, haven't I? I came home for the Bournemouth game, which was...
You lucky thing.
I mean, I enjoyed the rest of the weekend, but just the football really let me down. It was lined up to be so good, wasn't it? We went to the pub, we had amazing seats, we were right on the centre, and all ready to go, all to have a brilliant weekend. And then, yeah, that Bournemouth game, not ideal, was it?
No, I mean, we had a brilliant view of us just being terrible, but we'll get onto that in a sec. Mikey, how are you doing?
Yeah, doing all right. It's busy time at the moment with exam season, especially spiking up for me at the moment. But yeah, like the two of you, the football's not been fantastic, so it's not really helped along the way. Unfortunately, it's not giving you a bounce of momentum to go, yeah, after that, I'm going to go and do my exams. It's not fantastic, but. Yeah, how's your week been, Harry? I mean, we've heard a little bit with you and Ollie, but unfortunately, I wasn't able to join, unfortunately. I wish I could have been there.
It's been a pretty calm week, you know, as much as we did lose. I liked being back at St Mary's Stadium. I haven't been there for a few weeks, maybe a month even. I wish it was a bit more of an entertaining game, even if it wasn't entertaining. Just get some points. 3, maybe 1 wouldn't have had much of an impact whatsoever due to the results that went around us. But yeah, it's been pretty nice. Thank you. And like I said, we've got to start with the proceedings on Thursday night. Bournemouth, well, they were added to a long list of teams, including West Ham, Leeds, Newcastle in the Cup, that is, Aston Villa, Nottingham Forest, Crystal Palace, Wolves and Manchester United that have beaten us 1-0 this season. Ollie, what are your opinions on the game?
Oh, it was horrible. It was a horrible game. We didn't look... We didn't display anything that made us deserve a point, let alone 3 points. We were so far off it. Bournemouth outclassed us. And I was just baffled at what I was watching. At no point did I see a consistent game plan. Did I see maximum effort from the players? Did I see substitutions and changes that made effective differences in the game? It was just a complete amalgamation of a poor performance for Saints. I don't really know how else I can put it, to be honest. It just, nothing went right. And when it rains, it pours. And it, yeah, just a terrible night for Southampton, which I think effectively signs us to finishing bottom of the league. Not only getting relegated, because I think a lot of fans we've said so many times, oh, does that mean we're down? Does that mean we're down? But it kind of means we're rooted to the bottom of the table for when we inevitably go down, which is a real kicker.
I mean, it didn't just assign us the bottom, it pretty much secured Bournemouth safety as well. What a job Gary O'Neill's done in the last few weeks. I think that's 6 wins out of 10. At that point, it was 3 out of 4. So they've really pushed up the table and away from the relegation zone. Mikey, what did you make of the game?
Just a lack of direction, in all fairness. That's what it felt like. I think it was probably a little bit drab because of the conditions. It wasn't the nicest of like weathers to play in, with the rain coming down and everything like that. So I think that probably affected the game a little bit. But you could just sort of tell that teams now are just playing lower and lower blocks against us, and we can't break a team down. And what's kind of surprising to me is that we can't transition anymore. That was our only way of scoring goals. Our main real strength over the last 2 or 3 years was our defense to attacking transitions. We were very good at counter-attacking teams and exploiting spaces in behind, and that's something we were good at. And we have no ability to transition anymore. It feels like we just get stuck in our own half and we struggle to try and get out, and teams can pin us in for long periods of the time and we have no outlet. That seems to be like the main struggle for us. So it's not even like the lack of chance creation isn't even it. It's just being able to get out of our own half seems to be the most difficult thing for us. But yeah, it just felt like same old, like an okay 45 minutes where we didn't really create anything, but we didn't let the opposition create much either. It just seemed a bit drab. And then a really soft goal, it felt like. I mean, the strike was soft. It trickled into the net. But it just felt like a soft goal that went in, and we couldn't answer any of the... We didn't even ask questions to the opposition. And then a lovely little bit of hope at the end that was wiped away very quickly. So, yeah, it seemed like a pretty normal Southampton game for the for this season, unfortunately.
So I'll stick with you because you mentioned a lack of plan there. Do you think that's down to the players? Do you think that's down to Selez? Do you think that's down to the opposition being able to adapt to us and us not being able to readapt to how they adapted, if that makes any sense at all?
I think there's expectation on how we like to function and how we like to play and press. We've done it the same way over 3 or 4 years. And yeah, there was that little bit of a spike when Nathan Jones was here, but under Selez we're sort of trying to play the same way and do the same patterns that we have under Hasenhüttl, so we get quite predictable. And because we're not cohesive in it, it's not automatic, we're not as good as it as we were 2 years ago, let's say, or so, when we were playing under Hasenhüttl. Those similar patterns aren't being executed well, and therefore teams are finding it easier to play against our press. And as they're finding it easier, it means that we're finding it harder to turn over the ball in those high areas and exploit the space, which is what we were good at. We know we've never been good at breaking down teams. We never have been good at breaking down teams. So if that's something that we were looking to do, it's not working. So it could just be... It could be many things. It could be match plans that are formulated by Selez and his coaching staff not being communicated well to the players. The players lacking understanding of what that execution needs to look like, and therefore it looks disjointed on the pitch. It could just be that lack of understanding, because a lot of those players, but we're using two forwards that don't play as forwards as one, but also didn't really play for us last year and all the times that it was autonomous for us. We're playing players that don't look like that they know everyone else and what's it all doing, and it's just breaking down constantly. So all the lack of chance creation and things like that, it's down to the fact that our defensive shape and our defensive press just isn't as good as it was before. So teams are just finding it easier to play against us.
Well, talking about plans, we started with a new goalkeeper, well, not a new goalkeeper, but maybe for this season in the Premier League. Alex McCarthy replaced Gavin Bazunu. Ollie, do you think it was the right time? Or for me anyway, I think it's a bit of a strange time. He did concede through against Arsenal, but I think it was by far not his worst performance of the season. I felt that it was just a bit strange.
Yes. I mean, I don't think he had a particular, like you said, I don't think he had a howler against Arsenal. And I don't know whether he just thought, let's put a bit of experience in this final run. But I think he spent so much time, well, I say he, we've had three different managers over the season, but Bazunu's been kept in goal almost to kind of show that faith in a young goalkeeper and say, even if you do make some mistakes, we're still going to continue to play you. But yeah, it seems like it was just... I don't know, maybe he thought, let's try and put a bit of experience in there in this final little run in and see if that makes a difference. But then I did also notice that we lost some of the elements of Bazunu's game, because Bazunu's very quick off his line. And I think McCarthy does struggle with that sometimes, coming off his line and commanding his area. His distribution, I think, is worse than Bazunu's. And to be honest, the major... I can't really think of a save that he made. There was just one main shot on goal from Bournemouth that went in. So save wise we've always known McCarthy is just kind of straight down the middle. He doesn't pull off wonder saves, but he doesn't really make any mistakes. Maybe that was the thinking, just try and have a kind of solid goalkeeper and not have any howlers that could cost us. But yeah, strange one. I thought it's such a to do it 33 games into the season now to do it, it seems maybe a little bit late, but hey, it didn't really matter, did it?
No, I mean, I was a bit nervous when it was still 0-0 and he sort of slipped on the the wet surface right in front of goal and we almost conceded from it. Mike, if you were the manager, would you almost be tempted to keep him in until the end of the season? Maybe Celeste thinks there's still a chance that we could stay up and this is the decision he had to make. You know, he's tried Adam Armstrong at times, he's tried Ariba at times, he's tried different players and this was the one position that he hadn't really changed and he was hoping that this would make the big difference, but it really didn't.
Well, it was a decision that's been discussed all season, hasn't it? I remember having this conversation 4 or 5 months ago when Bazunu wasn't the most solid goalkeeper in the world at that point. And I think if McCarthy was fit throughout the year, I think this decision gets made 3 months ago. I don't think it gets made now. I think it's a strange opportunity that he took to take it this late in the league, but. You've seen weirder things happen where McCarthy comes in and like adds solidity to the goal. And in all fairness, against Bournemouth, he faced two shots that were on target. That was all that was mustered from Bournemouth. So he saved one of them and he couldn't quite get to the other one. But in all fairness to him, there was about 10 players in the way and he probably couldn't see it until late. So, yeah, no, I think either or would have had a good performance on that night. I think... It is just a strange timing to take Bazunu out of the firing line where it didn't really feel like he was in the firing line at this point. I think a lot of people had been accepted that he had quite good performances in the last couple of weeks and he hasn't made outstanding saves, but he's not been making too many mistakes, it feels like. It feels like a weird timing for, unless I'm missing things or misremembering stuff, I can't really remember a mistake that he's made, so... Yeah, it seems like a weird timing, but yeah, it's like Ollie said, sure, why not? Like, let's just try something new. It's not been working before. Why not try something different and see if it works?
We started the game relatively well. Walcott and Armstrong had two chances within the first 15, 20 minutes, and they weren't able to put them away. Ollie, why do you think it stops after that? It felt like after that, until the VAR incident when we put the ball in the back of the net with, you know, a couple of minutes left, we didn't really have anything to do, or we didn't have anything to really hold on to grab onto, to watch. The atmosphere was flat, the stadium, it sort of, the weather sort of showed our performance, really. Just nothing happened after those two chances.
No, it was empty as well, wasn't it? Really empty, and it continued to empty out throughout the game. And I remember we were having a long chat on the walk back, and we were kind of saying, the fans are just kind of disconnecting now. They can't even be bothered to stay to the end and boo the players off. They've seen it so many times this season. They've seen the same repeated performances, which have been flat, lacking creativity and not good enough. So they're just going to leave. They're thinking, why am I going to stand here in the cold, in the midweek? I've rushed here to try and get to this game. I've turned up, I've paid my money, and I've not seen a good enough performance. The fans are just not going to continue to do that. So I really don't blame the fans that didn't turn up, and it's a two-way street. The players have to give you something to get excited for. Obviously, the fans will get up for the game because they're football fans. They're excited for it, and you do get that bit of energy the first 5-10 minutes. But then if you continue to play passive, not very exciting football, and just give the ball straight back to the opposition and turn it into attackers v defenders, then it's hard for the fans to continue to keep upbeat. And it was flat from the players and that passed over to the fans.
And Michael, what do you think, you know, we mentioned Gary Neil a bit earlier, someone that's been able to turn a club of similar stature around. You know, I know a lot of people say that Bournemouth are smaller than us and things like that, but only really in sort of stadium capacity because they've been in the Premier League a couple of seasons. I know that they got relegated a few years ago. This is their first season back after two away, but you know they've got experience at this level. What's the difference that Gary O'Neill's done to what Ruben Selles has done? Yes, we had a bright start, but so did they. Bournemouth fell off, but they've been able to shoot back up.
I mean, I'm not really too sure. I don't watch a lot of Bournemouth, unfortunately. Like, they've had a fantastic rise at the end of the year, but it seems like they've got players who can just do something like a little bit special. I know like that's something that we talked about a couple of weeks ago and debated over whether you need these special players or not, but they play with a recognised striker. They play not a simplistic system, because I think that would be too harsh on Gary O'Neill, but it's quite a recognisable system to have, where you've got a big striker up top in Solanke, who's good in the box but also can hold up play well. They've got dangerous late runners into the box. Like, a player like Philip Billing has completely changed Bournemouth. Like, the way that he played at Huddersfield is different to how he plays at Bournemouth. His late runs into the box are fantastic, and he becomes a real attacking threat. It's trying to get those small percentages out the side, and he's doing it really well. He's getting it out of them really, really well. I mean, Marcus Tavernier looked probably the brightest player on the pitch that night. Again, I wasn't there, so I'm just assuming from the radio coverage, but he seemed like a really, really bright player who wanted to take people on and had that maybe encouragement and backing from his manager to tell him to do that. I think it's also easier in Bournemouth's head at the moment is that they've had that turnaround, they've had those wins on the board that has allowed them to spike up there, so they're playing under less pressure. And you think Southampton now, what is it, no wins in 9 or something like that? I can't remember exactly, but no wins in 9, and that's not the nicest conditions to play under. So yeah, I think that's probably the biggest difference between the two of them. And like, I see people on Twitter, this may be a point for later than now because we're in the middle of discussing the match, but I see people on Twitter going like, oh, we let go of Nathan Redmond, and like, he's better, he's a better winger than all of the wingers that we currently have at the moment. So no, you are still, the people were still giving him a stick when he was here. Like, he could pop up with 2 goals a season, but it wasn't like he was a record-breaking winger for us, someone who's going to sort of create... He would create something out of nothing once and then probably not do it again for the rest of the season. You go, well, that's not really good enough. So going back on past players and things like that that we sold in the summer is not necessarily the thing that we got to do now, because of the fact that I don't think that they would have been good enough for us to be in this position.
It might be due to his attributes about being able to drive forward, but then I guess a lot of people moaned when he lost the ball when he drove forward.
There's lots of players on the pitch at the moment that can drive the ball forwards. Like, Adam Armstrong can do it, Charlie Alcaraz can do it, Theo Walcott can do it, Elie Anuzi on his day can do it. Players can drive the ball forward. It's just
lack of confidence then.
I think it's a lack of confidence. I think it's a lack of fluidity, because as much as you can, like, if you can run the ball forward, if there's space in front of you, that's fine. Like, run into that space, and then you've got to find a passing option. So if you make that run, someone else has got to make a run as well. You can't just do it all by yourself. Unfortunately, we don't have players who can do that. We don't have a Gareth Bale that can run through everyone and stick it in the back of the net. So that's your issue, is that there seems just to be a lack of cohesiveness between the sides. And all of a sudden, because Redmond could run into space, but then he needs someone else to run out of the space for him to continue running into it. And then if he can attract that man, there's a pass there for him to make, if that man is making a run. So it just feels like sometimes we're a little bit disconnected and a bit disjointed, while Bournemouth just seem very structured in the way that they do things, and it becomes more, I don't know, just easier to play in those situations. So, yeah. I don't know. It just feels like every player out there doesn't really know what everyone else is supposed to be doing.
Yeah, talking about Bournemouth, they went 1-0 up through Tavernier, one of their summer signings from Middlesbrough, and it ended up being the game winner. But, you know, you look at the game, Ollie, do you feel that Selles was too slow to make changes? We had Sulemana on the bench, we had Adams on the bench, but it felt like it was too slow to make the changes. I feel like they would have been able to change the game a lot quicker. I think as soon as Sulemana came on, he got one of their players on a yellow card. He picked the ball up, put it through their legs, and went the other way around. Adams, he was able to hold up the ball. He was able to, you know, put the ball in the back of the net, even though it was just a yard offside. Yes, I know he might have the injury problem, so he could only play half an hour. That's when he came on the 61st minute. But it just felt the game was getting away from us, and we didn't switch it quick enough.
No, I think you're right. I think they are limiting Che Adams' minutes, because we're not playing with a recognised striker. And what Che Adams does, he puts his back to goal and he holds up the ball and drops it off. And we saw that as soon as he came on, he was doing that. He was doing that well. The ball goes up to him and he can bring it down, and it kind of cuts that line. There were so many times in the first half we were hoofing long balls. You were sat next to me the whole game and I was livid. The amount of times I saw us boot up the ball to Alcaraz, who doesn't go up for headers, and who else was that? Adam Armstrong was up there, who again is never going to win a header. I don't understand why we continue to do that. And even if it's to not win the first one, but to win the second ball, we wouldn't win the second ball either. So we were just giving the ball back to Bournemouth for them to be able to start another attack on us. So yeah, I think the Che Adams one, if you were able to do it earlier, would have made a massive difference. I think Stuart Armstrong, when he came on, had a bit of that ball progression. He had a really good connection with Maitland-Niles down that right-hand side. And they did play quite a few balls. Like Maitland-Niles has been kind of, well, I think rightfully so, but a lot of people criticise him for sometimes his energy levels, looking lethargic, not looking totally involved within the game. But he can pick a good pass, and he's confident on the ball, or at least he's composed on the ball. And him and Armstrong were picking up the ball a lot of the time, getting down that right-hand side, getting balls in, playing 1-2s, cutting it back, and then putting crosses in. They had a good little link-up, and it makes you wonder if they're able to do that in training. Why wasn't that something that was possibly done at the start of the game? Because we looked so much better when we were playing down that right-hand side and progressing the ball a little bit more. Like you said, Tsunamala came on as well and forced mistakes. It makes you question why it was not already done at the start, but I think we're very set in our style and our plans that we make during the week, and then as soon as that's counteracted and a change is made, we always seem like we're behind, and we're then reacting to what the opposition have done. So it's a common theme of the season. I'll mention it in the next game when we get to Newcastle, but it seems like we're so rigid in our plan, and if that doesn't work, then we're kind of stuck, we're kind of scuppered for the rest of the game.
It's almost like we're a little bit fearful. Like when we're on the pitch, we're scared of what the opposition will do to us. Yeah. So we'll end up putting too many bodies behind the ball and not giving us an outlet. And as soon as like you start being camped in your own half, you're never going to get out, and you're only going to get out of it through luck. Like you will give up chances, you will concede goals doing that, not having an outlet, not being attacking threat. And again, moving on to that Newcastle game, it happened the exact same way, in that it happened against Arsenal, it's happened against Newcastle, where we've gone, we're a goal up, we've managed to get a goal up somehow in this first half, we got a lead. And all of a sudden, we're just going to go, right, we're happy with what we've got, we're just going to stick men behind the ball. Unfortunately, it just doesn't work like that unless you've got luck on your side. And we think we've proven this year that we don't. So allowing us to have that counter-attacking threat when we're a goal up, it makes the opposition think. And we just don't make the opposition think. It makes me feel like we don't make them think. Oh, like if we go 1-0 up against Newcastle and we don't make that double change and we keep Sulemana up there and we bring on Che Adams as a number 9 to play the last half an hour or something like that, then you go, oh my word, like that's another player that they got forward. Maybe we've got to keep another player back. Is that someone that we got to sacrifice? And therefore, you make them make a decision. Well, we're just sort of sat there going, oh, we'll wait until we're 2-1 down and then we'll do something about it. And we're not being proactive. It's not feeling like we're playing on the front foot. And we definitely, I know we're not in the position to play on the front foot, but we might as well give it a go. We need points. So therefore, we must play on the front foot. Otherwise, we're just not going to get out of this situation.
Well, let's switch our focus to that Newcastle game. You sort of summed it up quite well there, Mikey. But was your overall opinion of the game just frustration that we let another lead slip?
I think there was always expectation that we were probably going to lose this game. I don't think anyone thought we were going to go in and win this game. So fair play to all the people who travelled up to Newcastle, because my word, that's... I mean, you've done it, Harry. It's a long drive, isn't it?
At least mine was a semi-final for Cup. You know, this was a relegation battle where we knew that we were going to lose and we're almost down anyway. So like you say, fair play.
Yeah, so fair play to the lads that went up there. But no, it felt like when we went the goal up, it was almost like, oh, we got something now. Let's try and make them think. Let's try and make them, like, let's try and get another body up there. Let's see what we can do. And we just waited for them to score. That's what it felt like. We just waited for them to score. And then we got a little bit lucky for going 2-1 down to Callum Wilson. And then we concede from a set piece, which is just horrendous. And I know it's just hit Walcott and gone in, but it's just such a soft goal to give away, and another soft goal in a season of soft goals that have gone in. But yeah, no, that's like the overall of Newcastle is they're a better side, they've got better players, but all because they've got better players doesn't mean that you have to wait for them to sort of dominate the game in the second half, especially to make them think about something. We've beaten teams in the... like when we beat City in January, I wouldn't say any of our players could get into that City side, but we took our chances and we did well and we played on the front foot and we did okay there. And all of a sudden we've gone the complete opposite in the last six, well, feels like the entire season. We've just gone, maybe we have to focus on this defensive record a little bit more. We've just ended up conceding more and more goals because of it.
Ollie, what are your thoughts on the Newcastle game? Do you echo Mikey's thoughts?
Definitely. I think we, again, it's that bravery. We've shown that we're able to do it. If we work hard enough and the team are together, you can get results against anyone. We did it against Arsenal, and Mikey's just mentioned the Man City game there. But the difference is we didn't sit on 1-0s. We went further on, and we got ourselves into the game more by getting that second goal. And that's the difference. It looked like as soon as we scored, we were ready to shut up and not let anything in. And I get that going into half time, but we didn't show anything in the second half. Absolutely nothing. We just let them come onto us for the whole game. You cannot do that for 45 minutes, especially with our defensive record. If you might be a Burnley and well-drilled and you know exactly what you're doing and it's the system, you know what you're doing. But we don't. We don't have a strong enough defensive setup to be able to hold a very talented attacking side like Newcastle out for 45 minutes. It's just not sustainable. And it meant that, yeah, they eventually scored. And then it looked like we were going to do the exact same thing and then try and hold on to a draw, get out all the time wasting and Gineppo rolling onto the pitch when he's injured because he wants to try and waste time. He literally got injured off the pitch on the sidelines in the technical area and then jumped back onto the pitch so that the play had to stop. That just kind of shows you the desperation. We try every trick in the book apart from playing some attacking football. So, yeah, very frustrating to watch. And just at the end of the day, outclassed by a quality opposition. We still have got absolutely 0 points from the time that Newcastle have had their takeover. And once in a position when they were in the relegation zone, we weren't. And then suddenly just look at the difference of where they are now. Excellent manager. Yes, incredible like amounts of money going into that team, but shrewd investments, players that have worked and created an impact straight away. And us just, yeah, going the complete opposite way.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly frustrating, especially that second half when we're 1-0 up after the first. What happened, Mikey? I know we sort of talked about it there and us sitting back. We mentioned the players maybe being a bit scared, but do you almost feel that Selez is scared to be playing on the front foot when we've got a 1-0 lead? Because then maybe he might be getting the blame for not trying to keep a clean sheet when we're 1-0 up against, you know, a team that are third in the league. Where's the blame there? And just zero shots. That's an awful statistic.
I think it's the reoccurring theme of not being able to get out of our own half. I think there was that. I think there was also the greater targeting of Lianco at right back. I think that was a huge, I don't want to say misjudgment because he did okay in the first half, but that was targeted a lot. And then I think with Gineppo expected to be able to cover that distance to help out Lianco, I think the first goal was just Lianco not being comfortable defending in that wide zone. I think that's what it was. He didn't want to come out and press Isaac and close down the angle of the ball, and he ended up allowing him to have 3-4 touches before putting a low drill ball into the box, and he's let the ball go through his legs and it's gone through to Callum Wilson, who's punched it in with his, it looked like an almost toe punt. That's what it looked like. He just gets something on the end of it. But yeah, it's just it felt like we were pinned in for about 5 minutes, 5 to 6 minutes before that goal happened. We weren't able to get out of our own half, and it's the same reoccurring theme throughout the entire year where you go, maybe if Che Adams was up there, and yes, I know he's injured, but maybe if Che Adams was up there, if we had a suitable striker who could hold the ball up, not saying anything about a 6'7" striker, but if we had someone who could hold the ball up and maybe allow us to come out of our own half, then that's something that he could, like, we could possibly do. And I think that's what we struggled with throughout the entire game. Of course, no shots at all in the second half proves that quite well, where we just weren't able to break out of our own half. And I'm not saying Tall Paul is the answer, because I don't think he's got the mobility to be a striker for us. I don't think he has that movement available for him. But if you have quality hitting the ball into him, you can see at Chelsea he did quite well doing that, was hitting the ball into him, and he can't even meet the match day squad. But I just want to put this, because after the Newcastle game, where we were talking about trying to be better defensively, this is the fifth season in a row we've conceded over 60 goals in the Premier League now. So, yeah, not wonderful for that statistic to be a thing. We hit 60 just on that amount, and we'll probably hit higher, probably more than every other season that we've had in the last 5 years. We'll probably concede more goals. And the fact is, we've only scored 28 this year, which I think is probably one of the worst goal returns that we've had ever in the club's history. So, yeah, not the best.
I mean, yeah, if Brighton hit six, and a rotated Brighton hit six past a quite a resolute defensive Wolves side, I don't want to do the reaction for that podcast, because that could be worrying. Ollie, we weren't able to do much in the second half, but Newcastle were, mainly because of Callum Wilson. He scored 2 goals, 8 in April, which I think is a record for Newcastle. And he can't even start every single week, which is ridiculous, because I don't think we've got a player that scored 8 in the season so far, let alone a month. What sort of impact did he make in that second 45 minutes?
He was borderline unplayable. He's a great player. He's someone who's got a little bit of everything. In fact, he's got a lot of everything. He's got pace. He can clinical, good in the air, strong, good touch. He's basically got everything you want in a striker. He's kind of one of those complete players, and you just feel very jealous that they've got a caliber like that. The one problem he has is his injuries, but when he's fully fit, he's a very tough player to play against. And he got brought on, was it at halftime? I think, I don't know off the top of my head, but yeah, came on. And Gordon had two very good opportunities to score, didn't take them, got taken off, Callum Wilson comes on, and those opportunities, similar to what Gordon had, got put away. And they went, right, we need to change this. We're getting the opportunities, we haven't got the goals from them. They have the good fortune of bringing on a player of that quality onto the pitch, and he puts chances away. So the problem is that we continue to give them good quality chances. Now, I don't know what the XG is. I'm sure Mikey has got it on hand, but we continue to give them quality chances, and they put them away because they had players that are clinical, and we couldn't handle it. Callum Wilson, a brilliant player, and especially when he's on top form and injury free, was always going to cause problems for us.
It was we had an expected goals against of 4.3, which is the highest we've had this season, by about a goal and a bit, I think. It's higher than when we lost 4-1 to City at home. That's how leaky our defence was for especially that second half. I'll be interested to see the XG graph of it and see where we gave away most of our chances, because that second half would be very interesting.
Yeah, especially because one of their goals we put in for them, so that wouldn't have gone in the XG chart either. But the game, it was savable. At 1-1, we made a double change. Armstrong and Sulemana off, you know, the two that combined for the goal. Elyounoussi and Armstrong on. Armstrong having just one touch in 20 minutes. And I see a lot of people probably fairly complaining on Twitter that that changed the game in a negative way. But Mikey, are they overreacting at that point? We still hadn't done anything in the second half. Was that due to the tactics, that they weren't able to do anything? Were they not having an impact? Can you understand why he's tried to make the change? But also, you know, Elyounoussi and Adam Armstrong coming on, it doesn't scare me if I'm a home fan, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, that is understandable. No, I think the changes that were made were to try and make the wingers slightly more athletic. I think that was an obvious area we were being done by, was in the wide areas. We were leaving our fullbacks one versus one too easily, and that's something we were trying to cover. Unfortunately, that's a very defensive-minded substitution where you're talking about, oh, we don't want to be a threat on the counter-attack. We want to be able to cover that one versus one to make it 2v1, and you're leaving more players to be done. It shows that we just can't. We couldn't trust Lianco one-on-one in a wide area. I don't think he was good enough to play that position as that defender, being someone who's going to be aggressive and want to press and stop across. I don't think that was him. So, I mean, even at that point, he'd been taken off and Maitland-Niles had been put on as well. So you would have thought he would have been a little bit more comfortable getting out there and stopping the cross. I just think the timing of the own goal for Walcott is just a little bit harsh on the substitutions. I think it didn't give enough time for them to have an impact before the goal was made. And it's from a set piece and it's hit Walcott's leg and it's just dribbled in. So I don't think that's something that needs to be put on to the players that have come onto the pitch. But rightly so, they didn't really have an impact. That was the issue, I think. They didn't really have that impact that they wanted.
Well, looking ahead to Nottingham Forest, that could be a huge game for them. Maybe not for us. We're 6 points away. But weirder things have happened. There's still 12 points to play for that would put us on 36, which has been enough to stay up for, I think, the last five seasons. But I think that the points tally might be a bit higher this one. Ollie, they're still fighting for their lives. They're a bit unlucky against Brentford, lost 2-1 right in the last minute. But they did get three very good points the week before against Brighton. What are your thoughts going into this one?
I'm not expecting much, I'll be honest, because Forest will be up for it. Of course, you'd hope we would be up for it, but there's also been six other important games that we've said that for and said, oh, this one is air quotes winnable. This one we should be able to get something for if the players are up for it. And they've consistently shown that they haven't turned up for those important games. So I'm worried. I'm still scarred from the other previous Forest game, which for me was the first time that I came to terms in the fact that we're probably getting relegated, because that was a truly awful game of football. The real loser was football that day, because that was a terrible game, if you cast your minds back to that one. The key difference is that we're going to be going to the City Ground, which is always has a brilliant atmosphere. The fans are going to be very truly up for it, and they're going to be able to smell blood in the fact that we've been on diabolical form, haven't looked like we've created any real threats, and they can see it as a serious way to put three points on the board. They're probably looking at it as their easiest game in their running, because they do have a difficult run-in, but we are by and far their easiest game. So unless they misjudge us and think, oh, we can walk over these guys, that's genuinely the only piece of hope that I have, that they underestimate us and we can cause a surprise. Apart from that, I'm very concerned that what would be for us our easiest game, we will still walk away with nothing. But who knows, hey? We could always be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, that dark day at St Mary's is still their only away win of the season. They did play quite well against Brentford, so let's not take that away from them. Mikey, it's Monday night, it's under the lights, Nottingham Forest. Well, they'll be able to see all the results that have gone on during the weekend, so they'll be able to know that if we get 3 points, maybe that'll push us out, maybe 1 point, that'll push us out. From a Saints point of view, though, it'll be very, very difficult to sort of G the players up, knowing that our fate is almost sealed. Or maybe it'll be easy to G them up, because they know that if we lose this game, it'll be mathematically almost impossible. How would you look at it from a player's point of view? How would you look at it from Selez's point of view?
Just a little bit of pride, I think. That's probably what it is. Like, you see, the teams that usually end up bottom of the league, they sometimes have a little bit of a renaissance at the end, because it's sort of like, well, we're down, we're gone. Like, mathematically, we're not gone, but we pretty much are there. If we lose at Forest and other results go our way, it's 9 points from three games is what we need. So it's not looking fantastic. And especially with Forest's home record as well. Out of the 30 points they've picked up this year, 24 of them have come from home games. So, yeah, it is not a good percentage for us to be walking into at the moment of what Forest can do. But yeah, it'd just be playing for pride. Like, as much as like people say that they haven't, I genuinely think that the players have played at 100% for majority of the season. I just think the madness behind the scenes, the constant managerial changes, the fact that the squad are so young and a little bit inexperienced. I think there's loads of factors that play into how this season has played out. And again, we can get into that more in our 3-hour season special at the end of it, because I'm going to have an hour and a half to talk on my own, I think. I think there's a lot to be said about this season. But yeah, that's what I'd go for. Look, we're probably down. It's probably the end of was that Bournemouth game. Newcastle has sort of just sunned it up. Just play with a little bit of pride, and hopefully we can get a goal or two. That's all my hope would be for the people who are travelling up on the bank holiday Monday. It's going to be a late kickoff. It's going to be a late night for them. So give them a goal or two and see if they can celebrate something a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, that end of season review, I think there'll be a part 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. I don't block it all together. Ollie, I know you've got a slight soft spot for Nottingham Forest. Who should we look out for in their team? If I'm looking at it, I'm looking at Morgan Gibbs-White. I know he cost a lot of money from Wolves, £40 million, in fact, but I think he's been their star man this season.
When you say I have a bit of a soft spot for them, we're talking very tenuous there. And that was from when they came up in the Championship, because I wanted to see them get promoted so I could go visit the City Ground. Am I going to visit the City Ground this year? Probably not. So
Monday night.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. I was absolutely fuming when that came through, because I was thinking it's one of the stadiums I'd really like to go to. And when they were in that kind of that playoffs thing, I was thinking, yeah, I'd love to get them promoted so I could go to the stadium. Historic history with Brian Clough and all of that. So I did kind of follow them for a little bit, and I knew their Championship side. And then they came to the Premier League and they got like 25 new signings. So the fact you've come to me for the Forest scouting report, and unless you want information on Joel Worrell in his Championship season, I haven't got too much knowledge, to be honest, Tiz.
Yeah, fair enough. Mikey, then, if you look at their squads, really, do you think they should be doing better? You know, Kaelor Navas, Renard Lodi, Morgan Gibbs-White, they've got a lot of investment. Or is it similar to us in the fact that they've changed so much so quickly, that's why they're struggling?
Yeah, I think that's it, the nail on the head. There's a lot of clubs at the moment in the Premier League that have signed a lot of players, nodding at Chelsea here, where they signed a lot of players and it just seems like it's just a little bit mental. And then a huge summer, they'd struggled for a little bit, especially at the start of the season, to try and get something together. And it feels like that they have at the moment. And I mean, the reliance on Brennan Johnson and Morgan Gibbs-White have been amazing this year. Both of them have played really, really well this season. I mean, for the money that they bought Morgan Gibbs-White in, I think we were probably out of that race before it even happened. But I know there was talks in the summer of us getting him. It's a shame we haven't, because he does look like a very, very strong player and has the ability to play in the Premier League. I think Brennan Johnson, his speed is definitely something that underpins his quality, but technically he's a fantastic player as well, and he's very strong on his left foot. So I think those two have been key for them this season. A lot of the other signings, you do think maybe they've just struggled a little bit. They're slightly left field signings, and you wouldn't be like, you wouldn't see them at like proper high-end Premier League clubs, but they've done enough for them. It's obviously been an improvement. They've had a lot of players that they had to replace from that Championship season, because I think they had 6 or 7 were in on loan, weren't they? Mm-hmm. From that starting 11 that played the playoff final. So you've seen a couple of them have been misses. Jonjo Shelvey, maybe one of them. Jesse Lingard probably has been as well. There's been quite a lot of misses from their squad, but the ones that they've got right, they've really paid off. And I think a goalkeeper like Kaelor Navas does change the game for you. Like someone who's won 4 Champions Leagues with Real Madrid, that is obviously something that's going to change the game. So, yeah, I mean, Forest will be a tough test. They're a side that have spent a lot of money this year and are probably hoping to stay up or at least cement their position as a club that, even if they go down, they'll have the ability to bounce back up with the investments that they've made this season with the Premier League money. So, yeah, I think it'll be a tough one. If it's a situation for Forest, it might actually put more pressure on Forest than it does on us, because they need the points. They've got a chance of getting out this. We're sort of like, hey, we got 3 more games left. Let's have a laugh. So, yeah, I think that's probably what it will be like, unfortunately.
Ollie, the final question before our favourite part, the score prediction time. Who do you want to see? Do you want a big change? Do you want us to chuck in a couple of younger players because it's near the end of the season, our fate is almost secured? Do you want us to put out the strongest possible team because we've still got a fighting chance, maybe, possibly? Who do you want to see?
I don't really want to play the youngsters, to be honest. If Che Adams is fit, I think he's got to play. He's our best player at holding up the ball. I'd love to see Alcaraz turn up because sometimes he can be very hit or miss, but he was important in the goal we got against Newcastle. He's very good on the break and he's not afraid of making things happen, which I think a lot of the other players in the side do. We mentioned it about bravery earlier. He's a player that is slightly fearless and Celes has had his problems with him because he's not as committed on the defensive side, but attacking-wise, he does actually give us a danger going forward. So hopefully a link-up play between Che Adams and Alcaraz could, fingers crossed, give us some sort of threat against Forest.
Right, score prediction time. I am going to go for a 2-1 defeat. I don't want to say it, but that's what I'm going to go for.
Yep.
Mikey, what do you think? You give me a shocked face there, but are you going to say the same or different?
I'm going to go for a 2-1 win, because why not? Ooh. You know, why not? It'll be nice to actually get a win on the board. I think, fingers crossed, Che Adams will be fit for it and we can actually play with a striker. I think that'll be key to it, is whether we actually play with a 9 or not. But yeah, fingers crossed we can just sort of ruin Nottingham Forest night and then they can come join us next year because it'll be a lovely reunion.
And Ollie can get his away day if Nottingham
Forest. Ollie can get. That's what I really want. I want Ollie to get his away day next year. That's what I want.
Put it on Twitter, but I made it, boys. And it wasn't refixed on a Monday night.
Ollie, are you going to say a Saints win to try and force Nottingham Forest into the relegation zone?
Do you know what I might do? I might predict a draw, so at least in one way or another, someone gets the result right. How do I think? I could see it. I could see it being a draw because it would be useful for absolutely no one. It wouldn't be enough for us. It would basically put us down. Forest wouldn't be very happy with it. They'd want a win. So I could see a 2-2 draw and everyone going home unhappy. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, that would be delightful. The Arsenal game, to be fair. We've already
exactly,
had that once this season. But that's all we've got time for this week's podcast. It's been a bumper one. We've talked about Bournemouth and that disappointing loss. We've talked about Newcastle and that relatively unsurprising defeat, although we did get a goal, so I guess that's something to cheer for as well. And we've previewed the game against Nottingham Forest, which is definitely bigger for them than us. But if we win, we just about still have a fighting chance of staying up. I might be mental, just even bringing that into the universe. I've been Harry Tizard. I've been joined by Ollie Boast.
Thank you very much for listening.
Mikey Maysman.
It's sad that we're now celebrating goals scored, but yes, thank you for listening.
I mean, next week it's just going to be shots on target that I'm going to be celebrating.
Yep, XG. They're going to hate it.
Next week we'll talk about that Nottingham Forest game and preview the match against Fulham. We'll see you next week.